Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon. This is Nathaniel Coburn for Heritage Radio Network, and this is a special interview in anticipation of a couple of upcoming events in Brooklyn in April for those of you interested in the burgeoning world of zines. And we'll be telling you more about those events at the end of the show. Right now, I'm on the line with Malika Gharib, founder of a popular Washington, D.C.-based zine known as The Runcible Spoon. Founded in 2010, The Runcible Spoon is dedicated to capturing the pleasures of eating through a home-curated blend of storytelling, collage, illustration, and a dash of whimsy. This seasonal publication is community-driven and completely DIY, with a penchant for cooking at home. Good afternoon, Malika.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
I appreciate
it. Very excited to be on the show.
And thanks for calling in. I'm a Philistine when it comes to the zine scene. So for the uninitiated and myself, what on earth are you all doing exactly? What is the Runcible Spoon? What are zines? Let's dive right in, huh?
Yeah, so zines are basically independent publications, much like magazines, that anybody can make on any variety of topics. So if you wanted to write a magazine about your ex-boyfriend, you could definitely do that and make it any size you want, add any photos you want, and sell it to people, sell it to your friends, sell it to the zine community, and people will buy it. So that's zines in a nutshell. And The Runcible Spoon is a food zine that I created in 2010, as you said. And it's for people who basically just, you know, it's not about cooking. It's not really about restaurant reviews. It's not really about up-and-coming trends in the food world. It's more of the inner feeling that you have when you really, really like food. It's about the imagination. It's for people who basically go to sleep at night next to, you know, reading cookbooks because they want to dream about food all night. So it's a zany world of food. And I'm very happy to have discovered through doing the zine that there are so many writers out there who just want to write about the concept of food as a wonderful thing. Which is what the zine is all about.
Let's take an example. The current issue you have is the breakfast issue, right? And this is your 10th issue of doing these so far.
Yeah. Right?
What can we look for in the breakfast issue? What are these sort of stories that capture this kind of dreamlike? It's an approach that's, yeah, you said it's not restaurant reviews and it's not just recipes, but what's the aesthetic like?
Yeah. So we have a writer who has her own magazine in D.C. Her name's Pandahead, and we sent her out on a mission to find the cheapest coffee in all of D.C., and of course, they were also the most disgusting coffee, but we wanted her to review the cheapest coffee in D.C., and that's one story that we have, and it's pretty great. She ended up finding that a coffee from a gas station tasted of soap, which is to be expected. Another thing that we have is a choose-your-own food adventure. We have a cut-out fortune teller. Remember when you were in grade school and used to make those fortune tellers and in class?
With the four corners and you lift up the flap and all that kind of stuff?
Exactly. Uh-huh. So we have one of those, but it helps you decide what to have for breakfast. So that's another thing we have.
And you can cut it out of the zine, I take it?
You can cut it out of the zine and make it at your whim. Mm-hmm. And we also have a wonderful choose-your-own-adventure path, another choose-your-own-adventure thing, where it's like a flow chart of how to help you decide what to make for brunch. And it is very confusing, and it probably won't lead you to the answer you were looking for, but it is there if you choose to use it.
So do you dabble in, or does this zine deal in recipes that don't actually amount to the creation of any particular dish? Are we talking about like magical recipes here? Are we talking like
totally
existential recipes?
For our For our Mad Science issue, which is a couple of issues back, we had the wonderful opportunity to interview these guys from London who make these amazing food installations, Bompas and Parr. I'm sure you've heard of them. Mm-hmm. But they have this recipe for Princess Diana's milk jam, which involves a piece of her hair when creating it. So that's one example of a recipe that you actually can't make at home, but is wonderful to read.
Speaking of things that aren't necessarily real, what is a runcible spoon?
So people say that it's a spork. I get emails all the time saying, like, the runcible spoon is a spork, and it's not a spork. It's just a made-up word that Edward Lear, who wrote the poem The Owl and the Pussycat...
I was going to ask if it came from the Edward Lear poem. That's great.
Sure it did. and it's basically this made-up object, and... you know, maybe that's something one day we'll try to figure out what our runcible spoon looks like. But for now, it's just a made-up thing.
Why that name for the magazine?
Well, that was the first... Remember Scholastic books?
Uh-huh.
And you used to get those little little paper things at home where you could buy the books from this catalog? That was the first
book
that I ever...
Yeah, all I went for was Goosebumps. Those were the ones I'd order from the Scholastic catalog, I remember, yeah.
Exactly. So I got, that was my first book that I ever ordered, and it was a really wonderfully illustrated rendition of The Owl and the Pussycat, which is such an outdated poem. But I liked it because that was the aesthetic that I wanted to go for, this sort of made-up, whimsical thing.
Mm-hmm.
Playful.
And what inspired you to turn that kind of aesthetic into a zine, and why not a blog or that's a larger question I have, actually, but let's start first with how did this translate into I'm going to make a zine about it?
Yeah, so I've always made zines since I was 14 years old, and I never met anybody else in the zine community. So as I became older, I realized that it's actually, having your own zine is a great way to build a community for yourself, to find other like-minded people. So when I was in college, I had a music magazine. In high school, I had a music magazine. But then when I got out of college and I moved to a new city, I wasn't interested in music anymore. What I was really interested was food. And I was alone, and I didn't have any friends. And so I said, I'm going to make the zine so I can make friends with other people who love food just as much as I do. And lo and behold, 3 years later, I've got this amazing roster of writers and illustrators and who are also friends.
So what's the community like? In D.C., for example, there are other zine makers, I'm sure. I mean, what do you all do? How do you exchange? How do you, what are the interactions like?
So I think D.C. gets a really bad rap for not being a creative city. And the thing is that it is a creative city, but the people who are creative have day jobs in amazing places like the government or nonprofits or lobbying firms. But they all do really cool stuff at night, like, you know, their people are musicians or they have pop-up food shops or they run food trucks. So I think the Runcible Spoon's been able to infiltrate and befriend a lot of those people in the seedy underworld of D.C. and draw out talent from that. So that's what it's like. There are other zine makers, but a lot of our writers are people who just really love food in D.C. and, you know, need an outlet to express themselves that may not necessarily translate through their day jobs.
Do you consider zines like a movement of sorts in itself? I mean, is this the analog alternative to blogs? Is that what we're looking at? I know that the idea has been around for a while, but with these events that are coming up, it seems like there's a real energy behind this.
Yeah, and I totally forgot to answer your question about why not a blog versus print. But, you know, the answer is that I'm an illustrator. Well, I'm a freelancer. I do this. I wish that I was an illustrator, I'll say that. And I feel like, and I've always been making zines, and I feel like I just couldn't translate what this is in any other way than through a tangible print magazine. Mm-hmm. There's just no other way. I was thinking about, we have this upcoming event where we're getting people to create pages for a communal crowdsourced zine that we would put back online. It wouldn't be print, it would be online. Mm-hmm. But imagine if that was just text and, you know, a photo. It wouldn't be the same as what we're asking for, which is a handmade, hand-drawn, hand-collaged page. Mm-hmm. There's just a level of warmth and personality in it, and intimacy in it, that I think that a regular blog couldn't translate.
Hmm. What kind of scale are we looking at here? Like what do you estimate your readership to be?
I would say we have a readership of 15,000, which is a lot, I know. I calculate that just thinking about how many I print a year and how many people would read one copy. But The Runcible Spoon's gotten a really good following throughout the 3 years that we've been here through, mm-hmm. you know, here in D.C. and internationally. We we're selling our zines in Tokyo and Amsterdam, and I guess people really like food zines.
You had a write-up in the New York Times and the Hairpin, right? Other ones as well, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Since you've started doing these through the 10 issues so far, how has your relationship with the process evolved? Like, what have you learned about making these as you've gone?
So I think I've realized the context in which this zine is part of. You know, I thought that I was alone when I first started the zine. I thought we were just part of a smaller zine scene in D.C. You know, we have the D.C. Zine Fest. But I'm starting to realize that a lot of these zines that do exist are starting to get on social media, which is something that people didn't do in the past. You know, mm-hmm. these zines are very anti-establishment, so, you know, nobody wants to be seen hawking their wares on Facebook or Twitter. But I think now that people are starting to realize that that's so crucial for survival.
It's hard to avoid.
I'm starting to see it pop up everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit more about this Brooklyn Museum event you've got coming. You're crowdsourcing a cookbook, as you mentioned earlier. What are you when you envision the kinds of responses you're going to get? What are you hoping for? What do you anticipate?
So what I love about this is that people are just supposed to come with an idea and not really, you know, no one has a computer near them to save them. This is about you and what's in your mind and a piece of paper in front of you, and you have to handwrite everything. So I love it because I think what makes it so different is that it's almost like forcing a person to give an oral history of a recipe or a food story that they have. And I'm really looking for anything. I want the funniest story of, like, you know, the worst dinner party you ever had, or a made-up review of a made-up restaurant, or, you know, the best recipe you can think of using the leftovers in your fridge. Kinds of those kind of, like, imaginative stories. Mm-hmm. And since, like I said, there's no computer nearby to save you, you're sort of just left with your imagination.
What do you think you'd contribute?
I'd probably... Oh, that's a good question.
Let's say worst first dish you ever tried to make.
The worst dish that I've ever tried to make?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to tell you, or do you want me to...
Yeah, I would love to hear. I think it'd be fun.
Oh, yeah. This is a great question.
I'll tell you mine, too.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you the worst dish I tried to make. So I... this is actually disgusting. there was a time when I used to buy budget chicken, or there was this cheap store, and I bought some chicken from there, and it was gray, and it was like $3 for like 2 pounds, and that just didn't sound at all right. Anyway, I chopped that up and I mixed it with pesto, and that sounds good, right? But
yeah,
the whole thing ended up to be a color gray, and then I put in a tortilla, and that was the most disgusting thing I've ever put in my mouth. I didn't get sick, though.
That's good. Several years ago, when I first moved to San Francisco, I tried to cook dinner for a friend of mine, and I took a whole chicken breast and put it in olive oil that was too hot, and then squeezed a half of a lemon on top of it.
Oh, no.
And salt and pepper, and scorched parts of it and burned myself, and the middle part was undercooked, and I made some spaghetti too, so I put the whole chicken breast uncut on a pile of noodles.
Oh no, that sounds awful. Please write about that.
I've got the recipe. I hope I can come to this, and I'll definitely contribute. Malika, thank you so much for calling in today. I really appreciate this. It it sounds like a really cool thing that you're doing. On April 6th, the Runcible Spoon will be at the Brooklyn Zine Fest for a crowdsourced community cookbook making extravaganza at the spectacular Brooklyn Museum. Part of Target First Saturdays, this free event will bring the creative rush and collaborative process of zine making to the community at large. Open to experienced zine makers, people who have never even heard of zines, and everyone in between, visitors will get an introduction to the wide world of cut-and-paste publications by putting their own words into print. You can stop by the Iris and B. Gerald Cantor Auditorium, that's on the third floor, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on April 6th, to put together a personally designed page for a community cookbook zine using materials provided by the museum. The final product, carefully curated by the good people at the Runcible Spoon, will feature a gastronomical grab bag of Brooklyn's finest recipes and kitchen stories, and will be turned into a digital cookbook to share with both foodies and friends. Additionally, the Spoon will be tabling at this year's Brooklyn Zine Fest on Sunday, April 21st, at Brooklyn at Public Assembly in Williamsburg. For the second year in a row, BZF is free and open to the public, featuring writers and artists showcasing their self-published works at prices between $1 and $10. With more than 80 zine makers and over 1,500 attendees expected, this premier event is the place to be for zinesters and fans alike. Check out the full list of BZF 2013 exhibitors at www.brooklynzinefest.com. You can also learn more about the Runcible Spoon and see digital versions of their publications at therunciblespoon.info. That's the R-U-N-C-I-B-L-E spoon.info. This is Nathaniel Coburn. I want to thank you for tuning into this program. This show and all of the more than 30 weekly shows on Heritage Radio are available for free anytime on our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Who's doing all them things that I never did for you? So I